Today's episode is brought to you by Zoe, the queen of taste, the first of her flavor, the cruncher of chips, the breaker of games.
It's high noon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to High Noon Podcast, the competitive Overwatch podcast. I'm your host, The Blevins. With me, as always, is Deathblow. What's up, buddy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just woke up. Overwatch, all the 3-0s put me to sleep this weekend, Blevins. Doing good. How are you, my friend?
Oh, you know me, classic Florida Mayhem and London Spitfire fan. I'm wearing all the gear of my favorite teams, the Florida Mayhem.
Yeah, I
certainly have zero pieces of NYXL gear on, because that certainly wouldn't be a team that I'd root for, that's for sure.
Yeah, your team sure is having some human struggles, that as a fan of a team that, well, has had nothing but struggles.
That's true.
Pretty happy to see that. So yeah.
No, not happy at all, which is why I'm donning, of course, my all-time favorite team, the Florida Mayhem's jersey.
Speaking of donning jerseys, though, I know we've talked about it, and yes, because I kind of gave them some crap for it, it's on the way. My Houston jersey, out of nowhere, they updated it, said it was shipped, gave me tracking info.
That's awesome.
So if you are also waiting on any backlogged, absurdly large, four-person family-size, tent-size clothing to make it to you, it should hopefully be getting released pretty soon. So I was really glad that I didn't need to go find out how to contact support or
right.
something like that in order to get it resolved. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure I remembered that. You'll probably see it next week or something like that, depending on how long it takes me to pick it up from my parents' house.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we've talked about it a number of times, but I feel like it's worth bringing up that the season 3 jerseys, the staple pigeon ones, are super top tier quality and are awesome. If you were, we've had a couple of people actually reach out and ask, and full transparency, we're not sponsored or anything. We benefit nothing from these selling these jerseys. They are just a great jersey that I highly recommend. If you are in the market for buying a high quality jersey and you have the funds to do it, I would say it is an expensive piece for sure, but it is worth you are getting what you paid for.
Yeah, I having seen both the old ones, the new ones, all the different iterations, given the choice at the lowest price points they've ever been at, I'm buying the new version of the jerseys every time.
Yeah.
So hopefully they stick with them and that manufacturer going forward. I think it'll be good.
I do like the alt jerseys too. I'm wearing the Florida Mayhem one now.
Visually very nice.
Visually nice, but it's a different tier of quality. I got this one on sale. Like when the alt ones go on sale and they're $40 or $50 or whatever, then I would say, okay, you're getting closer to it being worth it. But the premium season 3 jerseys are, it's where it's at. So
premium.
It is premium for a reason. But let's get through a little bit of the housekeeping here. Of course, Blackwatch Report is keeping up on contenders, tier 2, tier 3, tier everything, except for tier 1. That's us. Make sure you're checking them out on their feed. Yeah, Blackwatch Report. Yeah, make sure you're checking them out on their channel and on their podcast feed. So if you're looking for more, the meme of supporting Tier 2, yes, do that. But also support the Tier 2 show, Blackwatch Report, on iTunes and Spotify and everywhere else, as well as Twitter.
Might be officially on a path to pro roster again, by the way.
You might be?
I think I'm listed as an alternate for Shrugoff's open division team.
Oh, nice.
So hopefully they need me in the off tank role and the undefeated diva meme continues, because I always like adding wins onto that particular erroneous and completely irrelevant record that still stands, still undefeated in open division
and
as diva.
Yeah. Well,
which I don't know how to play.
Well, you also, I mean, what if the dream is lived and they make it through Open Division and you're just on the roster, and then they, you know, the team gets picked up and then you're in Overwatch League. You got there.
I want to keep my 2-1 contenders lifetime record intact. So as long as I can pull an I'm 37 and level jump, and you know what I mean, I've got a right. speed run the path to pro,
right?
Or I'm happy staying in Open Division, I think.
Right. Just yeah. Don't need to overstep your bounds.
As we're about to get to, there might be an off tank position for my team.
True.
I'm just saying. True. I'm happy to ride the pine.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in just a second. But if you haven't already, make sure you're joining the High Noon Podcast Discord, discord.me/High Noon Podcast. The best place to find all of the info, news about the league itself, as well as keeping up to date with what we're doing as well. But as you alluded to, Death, let's move into
it's high news.
I'm amazed I pressed the right button. We've got some. We'll start off with the story that you alluded to, Death. Spree has left the Houston Outlaws. What are you taking on that? Are you gonna miss him?
Absolutely. I mean, he's up there in the greatest mascots of all time conversation with Swoosh, you know, with some of these other guys.
With Swoosh and with Gritty.
Right. I mean, I say that really sincerely, hoping that it's received with the level of respect that we actually mean it. Like, I don't mean that to be disrespectful to Spree. Right. When I call somebody a mascot, I typically am saying that the fan base really likes them. They're a fun personality. They're somebody that really have a tangible positive impact on the team, even if it's not one of the six players sitting down on the stage and actively participating. It's been a while since we've used that term, so I just want to refresh its meaning. It's not actually taking a shot at anyone. I get why it could be perceived
or
that way.
It's taking a shot, but it's an Anna shot. You're healing with that shot.
Right. So I mean, he is somebody kind of similar to how you, I think, heard Nevix talked about, like when he left San Francisco. What a great teammate. We're gonna be I think Spree's probably in a similar boat on Houston. Just never really found a way to break into the roster and play a lot for an extended period of time, and now with Mecco there, he's not getting in.
Right.
He needed to move on in order to find somewhere else to go with his career. You know, and he felt like this was the right time to do it. So shout outs to Spree, and hope he finds a new home, whatever he plans on doing, whether it be coaching content, a different game, or, you know, really anything like that. So looking forward to seeing where he goes with his career.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a different player that we're going to talk about in a second or in a little bit that is on the coaching staff. So yeah, Spree's gone. Hopefully, yeah. I mean, he was a character for sure. So hopefully, he'll find a spot, and we're wishing him the best for sure. Okay, let's move on here and talk about Crystal joining the Guangzhou Charge as a two-way player. How big is this, Death?
I mean, it's a big yikes. This is a player, and I don't know the best way to present and really openly and just talk about what Crystal did in his time in the Hangzhou Spark. And he basically lied about an illness in his family, left the U.S. to go back home to have sex with his girlfriend. And there, I don't know of a better way to really explain what happened, but he that's essentially exactly what happened. This is a player who's actively being sued by his former Overwatch League team.
For some, like, ridiculous amount of money, too, right?
Isn't $2.1 million U.S. dollars. That's the equivalent. And it's funny, there was some, like, back and forth in the Discord about that, and people were talking about the Spark like they did something wrong, or I was like grimy, and it's like no, that's they didn't go AWOL and lie about an illness, and it just really bothers me that people like look at Hangzhou like they did something wrong in this exchange. You don't file a suit for the amount of money that the player is going to be fined for, right? When you have a player under contract like this, there's penalties, there's things built into it, you know, probably you know, if you look at it like an NFL contract, literally every team meeting that you miss or are late for, there's a fine amount that gets associated with it.
Right.
And we don't have the transparency into these contracts, but you can mark that off in the High Noon Bingo Square.
Yep.
That we said the word transparency. So yep. we'll give you that much at least today. So we have to assume that these contracts are pretty similar. So
right.
I'm guessing not showing up for a full season amounts to roughly $2.1 million worth of penalties.
Oh, fine.
So yeah. That's what the lawsuit's for. It'll go into arbitration. It will be settled for a lesser amount
right.
that will be agreed upon by the courts that they deem to be fair.
Right.
And you know what? It should be like really debilitating. He signed a contract. It's not like the company's not evil because they're, you know,
right.
going after the value of it. I mean, how are they supposed to do anything other than to file that lawsuit for what the penalties outline
right.
as their own? Oh. Because they have contracts with how many other players, and they want those players to, you know, honor them and live up
right.
to them. And it's got to be what happens. It's got to be what's going forward. Now, we talked last week. This is the, you know, WYA was signed as a two-way player for Guangzhou. So this is another addition to that roster. They're really going to be revamping that academy team, it looks like. So mm-hmm. really, really happy about that. Glad to see that continuing. And listen, all the issues aside, this is great for the org, right? Now they're theoretically going to be from back home where Crystal lives, so he won't have to be separated from anybody, and
right.
hopefully that works out for him and he's able to fulfill his obligations and be a valuable part of that organization and contribute. Mm-hmm. And also he's gonna have some pretty heavy bills he's gotta pay, so it would be good for
right.
him to be drawing a salary and working
yeah,
again
to work yeah.
I do think it's kind of crazy he signed as a two-way player, right? That indicates they might want to use him. Maybe that's by virtue of, hey, we are all playing from home right now. We just want to have the ability to pull him up if we need him. We
right.
know he's got the mechanical skill to play at that level. If that's the case, it, you know, it makes a lot of sense. I hope it fits. I hope mm-hmm. it works out. You know, these are really young kids, and I don't have too much sympathy when they have to deal with the consequences of their horrible, not really horrible, but just their actions, right?
Right.
Like the decisions he made, he's got to live up with them. I don't have too much sympathy for that, but I also don't think it should be career ending, or I don't think he should be blacklisted. But if I'm an org and I'm auditioning
yeah.
players and trialing players and somebody's got that on their record, that to me is like, yeah, I'm not even bringing them in for a tryout. What's the point?
Right.
You know, so
shame.
Interesting
shame,
yeah. to see how
Told
it plays
once.
Out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of incentive for Crystal to keep his head down, do his job, and just be a productive member of the organization. So hopefully that's exactly
yeah.
what happens.
The way I think about it is like, and again, I don't know all the details on this. So if I say something that is factually incorrect, just chalk it up to my ignorance on the topic, not me trying to change anything. If he signed a contract to, you know, let's take away the fact that it's esports and that it's Overwatch League, because I think a lot of times in the people that are like, oh, this evil organization is doing this, 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 and this, it's like, let's take away the fact that it's esports and that it's video games and that it's, you know, I mean, 18 is young, obviously, but like you're an adult, right? You mm-hmm. signed a contract, etc. Let's just take away the fact that it's esports and that he signed a contract, was hired for a job, right? Under these, you know, stipulations. Now, is it a normal job? No, it's an unconventional job for sure, but a job nonetheless. Contract was signed, et cetera, et cetera. You were paid to work under certain conditions, right? And what effectively happened, by my understanding, is he didn't work for and lied about the reason that he didn't work. So effectively, he's getting paid for something he didn't do, which is, you can look at it as theft in a way, right? Like, you know, when I worked at the grocery store, people would, you know, punch in and then just not do anything, right? And it's like, okay, well, they're just slacking. Well, the company views that as stealing because we're paying you for being here, but you're not actually doing what you're being paid to do, right? You can think of that as stealing. At least that's a way to think about
it. That's the way.
Time theft, right. And I remember thinking when I first started working there, when I was 17 years old or whatever, you know, younger than these kids, I was like, that's such a weird way to think about it. But then you think about it for 2 seconds, it's like, okay, that makes sense, right? And this is like time theft on a much larger scale and more elaborate than that. So like, yeah, is it a really large amount? Yes, but is it a reasonable amount? I mean, I don't know. I agree with what you said, Death. Like, yes, there's probably a lot of like line items that add up to this, and like it's going to be there's a 99% chance it's going to be settled outside of court, not secretly, but like privately in arbitration.
Arbitration, yeah. Which is basically court.
Right, but not in a trial, though.
Yes.
It's not like we're going to be seeing the attorney.
Also worth noting, this is a contract between a Chinese company and a Chinese citizen.
Right.
We're using that's U.S. true. Legal terms and stuff. I have no idea how that's going to go. And to be honest, being an international league, that's
way outside of our pay grade.
Right. Whether that leads to something being unfair or what have you, take it up with the Chinese government. Just open up TikTok, type it into the app, and they'll read it. They'll get around to it. Okay. but you know, it's just it is what it is.
Right.
And the only way I can look at it is from a U.S. perspective, limited understanding of the U.S. court system and how that works and how our contract law is. If there's more to it than that, like I said, that's between the Chinese people and the Chinese government and above my pay grade of $0.
Yeah. Well, if this gets down into bird law, then all of a sudden I might be.
I've seen most of the episodes of It's Always Sunny. So
yeah. We're pretty versed in bird law. I am imagining a small town lawyer just coming into this big courtroom defending Crystal, being like, I may just be a small time esports lawyer, but I do declare. Okay, I don't know why that's what I imagine Ryan Morrison sounds like now, even though we know what he sounds like and have met him multiple times.
Hey, that interview.
And he's also not from a small town. He's from New York City, so, and lives in LA now. So arguably the least small towns you could be a part of, but maybe he's changed over the years. I haven't talked to him in a while. Maybe he now sounds like a Kentucky caricature. So
what's the rooster from?
Foghorn Leghorn.
He sounds like Foghorn Leghorn.
I do not think that this man deserves to be sued for $2.1 million. That's probably offensive to someone. Mostly cartoon chickens. So before we get sued by cartoon chickens, we're gonna get DMCA'd by Warner Brothers. Long story short,
fought by the cartoon chicken from Family Guy.
That is the dumbest gag ever, but it's amazing. I mean, that's the whole MO of Family Guy, right? Is like, it's so dumb, but once you get to a point, you just have to, like, the dumber it gets, the better it gets. Like, if you quit at some point, it's all for naught.
And that's the premise of this show.
Exactly. Let's move on here and talk about Spazzo joining the Toronto Defiant as an assistant coach. Again, a void being filled that has been essentially there since Bishop left. There's been sort of a lack of coaching staff, at least in some cases. So it's nice to see an actual official coach, even if it's only an assistant coach, put in for Toronto. Death, do we know anything about Spazzo?
We know he's going to very specifically have a role as a scout within the organization.
Oh, okay.
There was another role. I'm blanking on it. This tweet is unavailable. Okay.
RIP.
It'll be an assistant coach. I believe it was like player improvement and scouting or something along those lines. So I personally love when they kind of qualify their job positions with like, this person will be working in a scouting department, stuff like that.
A little bit of transparency.
really, it really does help. And as a fan of the organization, you want to be able to see that.
Right.
You know, if the signings this off season don't work out, I know who to blame.
Right.
And I'm joking, but
I mean,
yeah, great to see. We love. We love seeing coaching staff added to teams. You know, it's always great to see, and I think especially hirings in this department are great to see amid COVID and everything going on with the pandemic and all that stuff, because it tells you a little bit that there's still cash flow coming into the teams. They're still doing okay. And as people that care about the long-term health of the league, that's a very positive thing to see. So,
yeah, always good. I mean, we've talked about it for years now. Always good to see coaching ads for OWL teams. Okay, the last bit of news that we're going to be talking about here is our two retirements from the Atlanta Reign. The first is Kodak has retired. Kodak has retired as a player and will now be moved to the coaching staff. And our meme lord, our longtime player, Baby Bay, has retired from the Overwatch League. I mean, Death, this has got to be pretty big improvements for Atlanta Reign's chances moving forward.
I've never known a team to practice addition by subtraction quite so much. You know, and I want to clarify that a little bit as well, because on his way out the door, that sounds like a shot at Baby Bay, and it's really not. Right. He performed well. He played pretty well this season. He was not a massive problem for the Atlanta Reign. He was, however, a player that didn't really seem to fit on the roster anymore in Erster's place. He seemed to be playing a little out of his role and still performing well. You know, it's just because you take out an MVP caliber player in Erster and put in somebody like Baby Bay doesn't mean Baby Bay's playing poorly or is bad. It just means I think your team is worse because of that change.
Right.
And again, that's not a slight on Baby Bay, as it sounded probably like a lot this season. You know, he's a player I'm going to be a little sad to go. One, because I completely called shot at his trade to Atlanta to begin with. So he's a little special to me because of that. I saw that fit. I saw it working, and then it happened. And I love being right. So that there is that. But also just, I mean, he's a fun personality to track. You know, he had the fun meme exchange with Sideshow a little bit ago that we were talking about.
Baby Bay Challenge.
And got a lot of enjoyment out of. And I seem to remember going on a rant at the end of last season, or at the end of the first season, I think it was, when they did the Dennis Holeko Award and they gave it to Mickey. I wanted it to go to Baby Bay because he did he had the Baby Bay Challenge. He used this platform to raise awareness on an issue and did it in a very productive and positive way. Mm-hmm. Got me to take a selfie. That doesn't happen.
Very rare. Very rare.
It just doesn't happen. So, you know, props to him for all the good he did there. I look forward to seeing where he decides to go. There's a lot of rumors about the FaZe Valorant roster or something like that. I don't know. I have no problems discussing rumors and things like that for games we don't cover.
Right.
Happy to share that little tidbit of information if you didn't know. That seems to be a logical fit. I think, I don't know if that's where Corey went or not, but
it is.
You might see him with some other Overwatch League faces. So I honestly, I think that's great if we can get Hip over there and everybody that's ever Sinatra, everybody that's retired from Overwatch League. So there can be one Valorant roster I can go watch on occasion and see how these guys are doing would be much appreciated. Not going to happen, but so as far as the flip side of this coin, Kodak is somebody that it's his second time leaving the Atlanta Reign roster. Right. He was signed and cut before moved back down to tier two and then brought back up. Didn't really seem to just do much for the roster. They used him at one point earlier in the year in kind of a double flex support situation. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I just think Masa is so good at Overwatch that you should probably just put him on Baptiste and you'd probably be better off for it. But So I honestly, I think this takes away some options from the Atlanta Reign coaching staff that I think may have shot themselves in the foot, similar to when Fisher left Seoul last season. Like, I thought, as good as Fisher is and as talented as he was, and I thought he was the best main tank option for the team, I sure was positive switching every week and every match was the wrong call. So we saw Erster in for every map this weekend, and maybe not the exact results the team wanted. Although the results you could expect, a 3-0, and then oops, they lost a map, so they were done from yep. their second match instantly. So glad to have that trend continuing.
Yep.
But yeah, so I think long term this will be all positive for Atlanta, especially mm-hmm. as we move into a meta game where Genji and pure projectile is much more needed. I think you were going to see the Erster baby base sub kind of happening organically. Mm-hmm. But who knows, because we would have thought that every week of the season prior to that. So it's really hard to say. But yeah, I think this is a case where they're streamlining their roster as the season goes on, deciding who they want to play where. And that's why the Kodak retirement was either allowed or happened or what have you. I don't mm-hmm. know what ability these teams have to block retirements or what have you. It's got to be some protection from it in some case. But yeah, I don't know. They Kodak's gone, whether it was, you know,
regardless of how it happened,
something Atlanta participated in.
Yeah.
I think that just leads to more play time for, you know, the best players on the roster. So hopefully it's a benefit for them.
Yeah, I think overall you hit the nail on the head. It's going to be positive overall for Atlanta. And I mean, again, to echo what we said about Toronto, adding more coaching staff is good, especially like players going into coaching staff. I think is very important, because like you've got, like, you know what it's like to be a player. Like we can talk all day about what we think the experience of the player is. We don't know, and we're not going to know exactly, because also, we're not going to be there.
This player has been involved in every team meeting for since he got signed, and you know, all these things. So he really gets to hit the ground running in his new role. And I think that at least in the short term, right, if you want to, you know, use a player that's been in your organization to continue to help your team, and honestly in the same way, right, you play like one or two maps I think at the most. It's not a very big shakeup really to just move him into a position as a coach and mm-hmm. Change his play time. Now he's not spending how many hours a day on his mechanics, so that if he has to go on stage he's up to snuff, and you know, he just gets to focus on the strategy aspect of things and play for his own enjoyment or what have you. So always love seeing the move into the coaching role. Mm-hmm. And hope it works out for him and for the team.
Yep. All right, last bit of news here we have is that the end of season playoffs format has been announced. It's going to be an online double elimination bracket in both regions. Higher seeded teams will be rewarded with advantages like buys and being able to choose their opponents. The top two teams that emerge from each region will then travel to Asia to compete in a double elimination bracket to determine the OWL 2020 champion. Now, there's some more details in there, and if you want to get the full write-up, you can check out the tweet from the Overwatch League and look at their actual write-up in their video there. But so, a couple of things to draw from this, Death, is that it's not going to be A, it's not in the U.S. and it's not on the East Coast, so that's a huge bummer for us. B, it's not even going to be an event like the previous fans. Yeah, there's not going to be fans there because, you know, this
or teams
COVID.
They're not even going to be in the same building.
It's not even in a place, right?
But they will be all going to the same region. They'll be going, I believe, to Korea. That'll help minimize their ping concerns and give everybody a level playing field. So, mm-hmm. and we've all been so hungry for the cross-region competition and everything like that. They had to get them all there. The United States is Joker a mess, a better word to use for the current state of the pandemic here? I say that from
why
one
not
of the
both?
Only... from one of the only areas of the country actually under control and seemingly doing reasonably okay with it.
For now, at least.
For now, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, it's... Going to be a lot of fun to see that play out. There yeah. is a crazy bracket. The long and short of it here is every team will be participating. They're all going to get an opportunity to try to win their way in, whether it's from a really low. There's huge advantages for the teams that are highly seeded, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that's very good and very important. Given the challenges of the season, though, we kind of already talked about the every team having a path through the postseason to try to be in that final four. It's not ideal, but nothing about this season was going to be ideal. So right. all that's left is to be fair and to be entertaining. And I think this has a really, really high chance to be both. So I'm reasonably happy with, given everything we've, you know, had to balance and work through this season. I'm pretty happy with how this this looks here.
Yeah, I gotta say that, you know, despite, you know, let's just like you said, let's say, you know, everything that went wrong and bad with the world, not just Overwatch League, push that aside. And I will say that a positive that's come out of this is that the actual, like, really hard, like a very hard division between the divisions, I think actually makes these grand finals much more exciting and, like, alluring to watch. Because, like, yes, previously playoffs are, you know, they're exciting for the, you know, it's the big show, right? That's exciting. But it's like, we've seen San Francisco versus Vancouver, what, three or four times in the season because of stage playoffs and whatnot. So it's like, it's not like a new thing. It's like, it's new in the sense that, like, we get to see these two powerhouses come together. And of course, San Francisco wiped the floor with Vancouver, in the finals of season two. But now we're going to be seeing two teams like a traditional, like in, you know, like baseball or, you know, really most other traditional sports where it's like the teams in the finals may have a regular season, game or two against each other. That's possible. But I mean, the Super Bowl, that doesn't usually happen, right? Like you're not playing the Super Bowl teams aren't necessarily always playing. And then baseball, it's less likely.
There's 16 teams per conference. You play half of the other conference every year, right? No, you play a quarter of it every year. So you've got four games in the other conference. Right. There's a couple flex games. There are some exceptions to that, but
so possible, speaking, but not likely.
Right. No, definitely no more than the once, since they're not in your division, but right. yeah, it's you face the opposite conference a lot less often than you face your own. Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of that element of, you know, two different, you know, people coming from two different worlds or regions. That's not right. a foreign concept in sports.
Yeah.
And heck, even in Major League Baseball, there's different rules for the different leagues,
that
right?
Is
there's
true.
Like the American League and the National League, and there's
that is true.
Designated hitters in some of them and not in
yeah,
I don't
I
know
do
the
think
rule.
That's really
I don't
weird.
Know the differences.
Yeah, it's pitchers in the National League actually hit, and there's DHs in the American League. I never really got why there's a difference there. It seems like something that was probably came up in 1906 and what
there's no metas in traditional sports, stop it. But
there literally is.
in all seriousness though, yeah, this looks like a pretty solid format. I'm pretty excited. Honestly, my one gripe might be just kind of the general tournament gripe that I have of yeah. like having them so often makes this a little less special. It makes it look on the surface to be kind of like the same thing that's played out three times.
Yeah.
And the only difference will be the traveling at the end and the, right. the final four. But yeah, there's its own hype to that. And I think that at a minimum will be very unique, very special, very different. Yeah. I'm also very curious the time of day they're going to play those games.
True. But that is just the beginning of the playoffs talk. We'll be talking more about the playoffs as obviously we get closer to them.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I wondered if we were getting one of those.
I in the middle of it, I had it ready, so I waited to fire it off. Okay, let's move on here, and I think this is the button. Let's move on.
It's tournament talk.
Seriously amazed that I pressed the right button. All right, let's start it off. First match of the week, we had Paris Eternal versus the Vancouver Titans. Paris took that one down 3 3-0. Dallas Fuel took out Houston Outlaws 3-2. Hangzhou Spark wins 3-0 versus the Seoul Dynasty. Guangzhou Charge wins 3-1 versus the London Spitfire. Chengdu Hunters take out NYXL 3-2. Man, I'm glad I'm not a fan of that team. That's an embarrassing loss. LA Gladiators win 3-0 versus the Vancouver Titans. Toronto Defiant, my true team, gets a 3-0 victory versus Washington Justice.
With the Florida shirt and London hat on.
Hey, my Toronto jersey is being washed right now. The Florida jersey was in front of the Toronto one, so I just picked that one instead. San Francisco Shock get the 3-0 victory versus Boston Uprising, and I know we had some special role swaps in that one.
That's an oof right there. Worse than either of our oofs on the weekend was that one.
Yeah. Atlanta Reign takes the 3-0 victory versus Los Angeles Valiant. Paris Eternal wins 3-0 versus Toronto Defiant. Florida Mayhem wins 3-1 versus Atlanta Reign. Again, continuing the Atlanta can only win in 3-0s. And then LA Valiant rounds out the week with a 3-0 victory over the Boston Uprising. So, Death, where do you want to start on this? Man, so many 3-0s this week.
Yeah, let's not talk much about those. Can we talk about how the schedule is made like 3 weeks ahead of the matches and we still get games this bad? There's no balance. The balance is shot. The ability to play everybody an even number of times. What are you doing scheduling so many bad matches? Not all of them you could know, right? You can't know Hangzhou versus Seoul is going to be brutal.
Right.
You can't know, but you can know that Paris versus Vancouver's probably going to be pretty tough. You can know, Toronto versus Washington might have not been too far out of it.
I don't
but
think,
like,
yeah.
San Francisco, I mean, some of them, sure, you can't know, but like, it feels like they could do a better job making this schedule. Especially since they're doing it partway through, like,
But how much of it is to make compelling matches, and how much of it is to we need the teams to play a certain number of times versus the other teams?
I think that's already out the window, right? Like, you can't have because so much of it was spent, you know, trying to isolate the regions within North America so that way the ping was consistent, and you know, like, so much of that was done, and then there some of the Asian teams were involved early on and other ones weren't, and like, I just, that to me feels like it's been shot. It feels like it's not been talked about, and in large part because it's just out the window, gone.
Nothing left to talk about. It's gone.
Right. So why bring it up and remind people that that's there? Right. So I don't know. At the end of the day, again, I don't want to harp on it too much because there's a fair few of these here that you wouldn't have viewed as stomps going into it, and maybe, you know, maybe shouldn't have been, and that would have really fixed it up. And it's hard to completely avoid it. Right. You can't just, we're only going to play.
Some teams are bad.
Right. It's going to happen. But man, it was like, the entirety of Saturday, why watch it? Why?
Right.
I literally fell asleep partway through match number two and only had to catch up on match number three, because let's talk about match number three, Blevins. The San Francisco Shock versus the Boston Uprising, the ultimate BM move ever. Super played Genji for the San Francisco Shock, and the Boston Uprising proved to be exactly what I thought they would be in this meta game, and that is completely and woefully ill-equipped to field the heroes that a competitive team needs to be able to play in this meta. They don't have a main tank that can touch Winston at an adequate level. They don't have DPS players that can play any of the main meta DPS, right? Outside of like the Ash McCree stuff, Jerry's good there. But honestly, so is Color Hex. So what's the other guy going to do? They don't have a projectile player. They don't have anybody that can even come remotely close to a passable Genji. They don't have anybody I've seen play Sombra at a decent level. Like, who would play Doomfist on that roster, right? Like, just anything that you saw happen this weekend, Boston just doesn't have it. And that's kind of what comes from building a roster with no intentions of winning games and things like that.
When you're the contenders team, then
Congratulations. There's a lot of contenders teams.
No, I mean contenders in the sense that you're the Owl Academy team is what you are.
Right, kind of. But nobody would sign any of their players right now because they wouldn't be able to use them outside Myungbong. Please free Myungbong. but, yeah, I mean, it's just – and what's insane, and I was hoping I'd be able to pull up stats on it, and I'll still continue to try to. Super performed so well on the Genji that you're literally left to question whether or not it's the plan going forward, right? Like, because when you're looking at this metagame, maybe this week is the wrong time to say it because you've got Reinhardt seeing a little more play than I thought he would. But honestly, I think that's an oversight, right? As the meta matures next week, I think you'll see more dive, less of the other ones. But I mean, he actually kind of just did well enough that you've really got to look at it and say, hey, looking at the rest of the roster, there's not, like, Architect was the Genji player and he's now on Hangzhou Spark. They moved him.
Right.
Even the other players they lost didn't have it, right? Like, Sinatra was never a Genji player. So who on this team is going to pick it up and do it? And apparently they had internal scrims where just, let's find out who our Genji player is, like tryouts almost for the maybe he won it. I'd be mortified to think that that's the case. But he's been streaming it a ton. He's been playing it, and whether that's just because it's fun, and he wanted to, you know, be well set up for this meme game against Boston. Who knows? We'll find out. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just wanted to throw it out there that, like, he actually performed statistically well enough that you really honestly need to question it.
When you think about it, is a sword that much different than a giant hammer? I mean, really, it's swinging.
Yeah.
So
the answer is yeah.
Yeah, it is. But
like, let's put it into perspective, right? Okay. If I look all time on the season at Genji stats, final blows per 10 minutes, where on the list does Super need to fall for you to get actively nauseous?
It would have to be, it's got to be top 10, right?
He's third place. So let's look at eliminations per 10 minutes. Okay. In second place.
Wow.
Hero damage per 10 minutes. Fourth place. Solo kills per 10 minutes. Okay. I see your point. But he's not, you know, crazy far down on the list either, right? He's above Architect. He's above Fleta, Haxall, Erster. Okay. Like, he's got one match and it's per 10 minutes.
And it's also against trash. Yeah.
Right. It's against Boston. But, like, it should have been worse than that. Even with it's Boston and it's one match and, you know, it should have gone worse than that. So, like, honest to God, props to Super. There's a lot of main tank players. The only main tank player I think that could have switched over and acquitted themselves better under these circumstances is probably Hydration. Why? Because he was a projectile DPS player, you know, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's just a hero squarely in his hero pool. So it was a phenomenal meme. It was hysterical. And it was only enhanced by the fact that you can now look at season long stats for 10 minutes and see Super's name in the top three on Genji. And, you know, just I was very impressed by him. And I wanted to just at least spend 2 minutes theorizing that it could actually be that Super is their Genji player.
I mean,
I don't think that's a good sign for San Francisco in this meta if it's true. But man, I mean, they've still got all the star power in the world, right? Like, it'll still be Striker on Tracer. It'll still be Choi Hyo-bin on the off tank. It'll still be Violet or Twilight on flex support. It's still going to be Moth on, like, there's so much star power here that you can have a player like Super on a role like Genji and just be like, hey, listen, just don't try to do what you see Sparkle do.
Right.
just be smart. Blade in response to teams diving us so that you don't need to hit all your dash resets right. perfectly and time every deflect in the world, and you can just swing on the massive bodies that are coming at you.
Yeah. You know, you play it like Reinhardt.
There is that style of play. You know, it's EQO plays it, right? So there's DPS players that play that style, and if you just ask him to do that, I don't know. And I love it, right? Like, if they did hold internal trials and tryouts to find out who it is, and you're super and you just got benched and you've got, you know, you're like a stream personality and like, so it all works. This is so much more five head than signing Chipsa was by Philly because that's a relatively funny meme, but this is better, right? Yeah. Like, this is ultimate meme. This is like, we don't trust this guy to shoot guns. Like, literally, even when the main tank has a gun infusion driver for Orisa, they're like, no, go to the bench. Like, you can't do this one. Like, he's not even their Winston player. Like, his Winston aim isn't even good enough, but he can handle the Genji. This is great. I hope it's the case that he plays. I hope they just roll through first placing the tournament with Super on Genji the whole way. It would be like a dream come true. But I'm also at the same time a little more seriously curious who their Genji player is going to be long term. Because it was always kind of the one role when they let Architect go. You're like, okay, I can see that they've got somebody, you know, other people that can play the Widowmaker or can do, but like, man, Genji's a little bit that role where like the person has to know life it and has to have a ton of hours on it. And like, even somebody that had played it passively in the old, you know, tournaments every weekend, esports format, somebody like Linkser, who would be their team's Genji player when it was needed, like he couldn't even quite hack it at the Overwatch League level. Like, it just looked a little less than just to see a main tank come out and do it, I don't know, it was great. I sure do hate Boston, so it was great to respect standpoint there. Like, everything about it was just it was A tier. So congrats to the Shock, congrats to Super. I hope you're a Genji all-star doing the reverse hydration, going from main tank to DPS instead of DPS to main tank.
I mean, even if it's not the main Genji player, every time it's a Genji meta, people are going to be anxiously looking for those starting rosters to get submitted and mouths drooling, hoping that we see Super get put in, because anytime it's going to be like Pine level, right? It's like, man, if Super gets subbed in for a DPS role, it's hype now. Like, when was the last time we had something exciting like that? The last time I remember is Pine, or like if Chipsa ever came in, but you know, or if Sideshow got played.
And like, it was all made better by, and they brought this up on the broadcast, and that's how I found it. But like, Gods tweeted a couple days ago, weeks ago even, why does every main tank player think they have a nasty Genji? Dude, go Orisa and shut up. the response by Krusty was, bro, that's what I want to say. And then he's starting Super on the Genji role, like a week and a half
later. The backstory makes it even better.
Just phenomenal. It was great. All right, well, that was more airtime than any 3-0's ever gotten on this show, but true. I think they deserved it. So let's look at some of the competitive ones, and I think that's where me and you start to get kind of upset. Houston versus Dallas, they were both reverse sweeps, by the way, these two games, the New York and the Houston games, really, really entertaining, if not prime examples of pristine Overwatch. I was a little disappointed by the just number of mistakes from Houston. Specifically, I thought, like, and they won the map too, which is kind of crazy. But like, hydration looked really rough to me on the Winston role, specifically on Volskaya when they were attacking point one. It took them kind of a while to break it. And then they did steamroll and get point two fast with a good time bank. So it's easy to overlook that, but it just really felt to me like hydration was just kind of like leaping into a doorway where the entire team was and then would just get shredded. And it just felt like he kept running that strategy back over and over again, like it was maybe gonna get him somewhere this next time. So that was a little tough to see. I really would love to see Houston go to Mooma in the pure Winston scenarios. He's so good at that hero. And he he's not even the kind of player where you need to worry overly too much about like synergy issues with it, right? Because he's very much so a solo operator. You think to the Eichenwald play, right? Like the Mooma's Grand Adventure that he had, where he pops his ultimate and is just like slaying people, and it was just insane what he's able to do sometimes on that hero. So I'd really like to see them go to him. I think no matter what you do at the end of this season, the Outlaws are going to be looking for a new main tank player.
Right.
And so I don't know. I get the logic, though, right? Like, well, it's kind of close, right? Like, if they think it's kind of close between Hydration and Mooma, and like every team's making the playoffs, so don't you just get Hydration better than Mooma on everything? So that way when we're there, I get it. But until I hear that reasoning come from them, I just look at this as like, oh, we lost to Dallas again. Yeah. And I do think Houston's a slightly better team than Dallas, though they're very much so in the same ballpark, which makes the rivalry, makes these kind of results more fun and more interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to avoid the frustration or ignore the frustration as a fan when you see stuff like that and you see other teams willing to make that switch and some of them winning whole tournaments in Paris, you know, that make that main tank swap. It might not be ideal, but neither is your roster at the moment. So make do with what you have is, I guess, the lesson I'd come away from that with. I don't know. Not too much takeaway, I don't think, from the Dallas versus Houston match. Houston talked about they made a couple of changes and strategy swap-ups late in the week, and they thought that kind of may have contributed. And Harsha basically was like, I hope people aren't blaming the players here. I kind of take this one on myself for those last-minute tweaks, disrupting things enough. And it was kind of rough. But again, I called this one going into it essentially a coin flip, and it would be decided on how the Dallas DPS players kind of fit into the meta, and they found their home and they found out how they fit, and they were able to make it work and pull it out. So congratulations to Dallas there. I don't think we've seen the last of Houston versus Dallas this season. I've got a hunch these teams are gonna pick each other if given the opportunity in tournaments, so hopefully we see that run back, as it's been lopsided in the win total department for Dallas, but it's been crazy close in the compete level of the actual matches themselves. So do hope we get to see that one again.
Yeah, it's always nice to see Dallas versus Houston be close, because a lot of times, well, at least some of the times, we've seen it in both directions not be close.
Yeah, it was especially early on when Houston was the better of them, right? And Dallas was just kind of woefully bad. As a Houston fan, great, you're not upset about it, but you feel more about the rivalry when it's like this, right? When the matches are super close, and when it's not going your way, you want to get the vengeance, you know, and you want to get revenge, you want to get vengeance on them. But I don't know, the other reverse sweep of the week, Blevins, you ready?
Yeah. So
what the hell are they doing, bro?
It's extremely disconcerting for multiple reasons, because they start off pretty strong. I mean, they start off 2-0.
Crushed them.
Yeah, like it wasn't like it was a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was New York wins decisively in the first two, and then there's like a tipping point. Like they get to the top of the roller coaster in, I think it was Numbani, and then it just goes over, and it's just downhill the whole time. Like multiple times on the cast, they're talking about New York underestimating their opponents, which it seemed very much so that was the case. And the other thing that they brought up a number of times on the cast as well is, in those last three matches, or at least the last two, Chengdu is doing their thing, right? They were running a Pharah versus SBB on McCree. Like, they don't care. They don't care what you should or shouldn't do. And I think throughout the course of the match, New York outthought or unthought, like they got bamboozled by it. Because like in the last match on I forget what map it was, but they brought it up like multiple times, like, this is a comp that theoretically is good against what Chengdu is doing, but this is not a good comp for New York to be running right now. Like, I don't know what you can do there, but it seemed very much so that New York did not prepare for this match at all. It seemed
you're like, talking about on Lijiang Tower when they're like rolling out Nene on Junkrat and stuff like that.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm talking about.
You have Hacksaw, you have Who Are You, who are projectile players like there. What are you subbing in these players for if not to use them? I will say, it was really hard to make too much sense of this because it was like two completely different New Yorks. It was like regular, it was like the first two maps were the regular season and the last two were the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it just
playoffs.
It just was really hard to reconcile and make sense of. And you saw them go to Who Are You on the Genji in this match. And a lot of people, I think, are going to criticize that because you have Hacksaw there. And I get it. But again, Who Are You's no slouch on that particular hero. I don't think that was the case. It was a mental thing. It was a team synergy equation that spelled the doom here. And I would be really curious to see what New York's scrim schedule and practice time and commitment level looked like in season one versus what it looks like now under the new coaches and all those things. And because it's that to me is one of the only ways I can logically piece it all together and make sense of what's been a season full of you know, a downgrade from New York here. It really has been. This represents a whole nother tier of failure and lack of living up to it than we've seen from them in the past, and really does open up the question to what are they now, right? Like, because they used to be the team that at the end of the day, whether they were equipped to go against Vancouver and San Francisco or not, they were the team that just didn't lose these games here, Chengdu, the worst of the region, the you know, they didn't lose these games. That was what New York was. That's why their regular season record, even right now after this game, is as good as it is, right? Their place in the standings is fine. There's no reason to panic there. But if they've lost their ability to put away the truly bad teams that they can face against, I don't know what they are anymore. I really don't. And it opens the door to, I don't know who to pick when they come up in pick'ems anymore, because that was the one thing I always had, was like, until they show me that they've lost it to an extent where I can't trust them in these games anymore, I've just got to keep picking. Well, now they've shown it to me.
Yeah.
They've put it out there. It's on tape. It's on paper.
Yeah.
For a sixth spot in the standings to suffer this loss, you know, they're plus 20 map differential overall. For them to lose this match was a little bit unheard of for the organization and with their history. It's just not something that's happened before. It caused a wardrobe change for Blevins, and honestly, it's going to really shake the confidence of the team going forward. So how do they react to that? Do they have the leadership in the building to you know, sometimes a loss like that wakes you up and it gets you back, you know, okay. If that's not okay, let's redouble our efforts. Let's commit more. Let's double down, or it breaks you. And when they lose their ability to compete at the highest level. And, so all eyes on New York, I think, going forward, as we look at the schedule this coming week, looking to make sure they're on it. They are, with not an easy opponent by any stretch of the imagination. So very curious to see how they're going to look, what they're going to do with their roster decisions going forward. To me, I'm almost wondering if maybe it's time to see what Bianca has on the off tank. Is the Hapa experiment finally over? Is a shakeup like that enough? I've said it a lot. You know, I think the main tank difference gets talked about the most. Amongst the, you know, the impact that a position can have, but especially a team where little mistakes and little issues, like I think happened in New York, right? They died a death of 1,000 paper cuts in this game. So to me, the off tank can really bandage those issues better than most positions can. And if Hotba's not getting it done, not that he's playing horribly or but maybe somebody else can come in and play a slightly different style and peel a little more for Jonak, so now all of a sudden he can pop off. Because this happened with him on Zen. Like, that's to me almost the most concerning thing, is he goes back to his signature MVP, all-star, skin in the game hero, and it still wasn't enough. It was a rough loss for New York, their fans. Thankfully, you guys were mostly probably able to sleep through it. And know the answer as you watched it, because, man, it's reverse sweeps hit different when you know who won going into them, right? You're like, man, you're watching, like, how do they lose this? Instead of, like, we got this. Yeah. This is over.
So
like,
clinging on to hope.
Done. One map. Oh, it's fine. We did 3-0 them. Who cares? We're winning this decisively. Yeah. Oh, no. So, yeah, that's the one saving grace for New York fans this weekend, is you probably just didn't see
just
it.
Woke
you just
up
saw
to
it after the fact.
Yeah. Definitely brutal, but I agree. This is a tipping point for sure. It is a rise to the occasion moment. Are you able to stand up to the adversity of the situation? Losing to a bottom tier team in the region, and do you come out stronger or do you crumble? So we'll have to see. And obviously this upcoming week, which we'll be talking about in a bit, is going to be a huge proving ground for them and seeing if anything is changing. But with that, Death, let's move on here. And let's break it. Yeah! Starting with the meta talk, Death, we have May, Widowmaker, Orisa, and Anna banned for this week.
Yeah, same bands, two week hero pools. So expect just more of the same, basically. Probably some, like I was saying earlier, I think as the second week you'll see less of the Reinhardt, more of the kind of Sombra based dive compositions with either Genji, maybe a little more Doomfist does come into play. But I think Doomfist is best when the other team is playing the Rein Sigma, because you get to go through the shields. You don't have to care about them near as much. You can still assault the back line through them. And I think there is a decent room for like a level two of this, to where you just go into a Winston based dive composition and your DPS becomes, instead of Sombra Genji, it becomes like Tracer Genji, since you're not needing to like hack shields and things like that. Now the Sombra will stick around if teams go to the Wrecking Ball, which I thought looked pretty strong. But all things considered, I think we saw the meta evolve over the course of the weekend, and I think we have a decent idea of what to expect. A little bit more of the same, with a couple of the teams that had a different take on it probably abandoned that take for what was successful for other people this week. So.
Don't fix it if it ain't broke. But we'll start with the first match of the week, which is Atlanta Reign versus Boston Uprising. You did hear me say Boston Uprising, and it's Atlanta Reign. So this is predetermined. The result of this match is guaranteed, right? It's 3-0. It's specifically 3-0.
Boston is in it, so they will not win in this meta. So they will not win even a little bit. Yeah.
Well, but also Atlanta has to win. Yeah. If Atlanta wins, it's a 3-0. So this is fully predetermined.
If I will say this, though, if Boston sneaks out a map, the 3-0 thing's done. Like, of the 3-0 is strong enough to help Boston after they've broken the map winning issue. So lopsided to me. It'll be crazy.
Next up is Florida Mayhem versus San Francisco Shock. Is Florida able to put up a fight against the top team here?
I think so. I think this has a chance to be pretty close. I do think Florida has their own issues, right? And that's that their Tracer player and their Genji player are both Yaki. Mm-hmm. And I think BQB being able to play the Sombra helps them, because it gives him a home within the confines of what the metagame will look like. But if this comes down to a battle of, like, okay, the best Genji needs to win – One of them has Yaki, who's at the top end of Genji players in the league, and the other one's only shown me Super. So I have to be leery of that.
Yeah.
And think, hey, there's a decent chance this causes some problems for San Francisco. That said, give me San Francisco here in the 3-2. I think it's going to be close because of that issue. But again, like, Chohyopin and like just there's so many ridiculously good players for San Francisco. This is why they're so good, because they're elite at so many different positions that when they do happen to be inadequate at one or slightly behind in one of them, it's fine.
I want to believe in the Florida upset, but I can't in good faith pick it. I will go with you, Death. I'm going to go San Francisco with the 3-1 here. Moving on to the Asia Pacific division, we've got Seoul Dynasty versus Chengdu Hunters. Chengdu off of a hot win versus NY. Death, can they pull it out over Seoul?
Yeah. Seoul just got 3-0'd by Hangzhou, who's been like really bad. And this is one of the matches I haven't gotten a chance to see yet on the week. So I will have to look at that one closely and try to figure out what's going to happen there before the matches start for the week. But absolutely. Chengdu showed an ability to get pretty close to the metagame and play it pretty well. Like Jinmu's a pretty solid Genji player. He's really good. The Wrecking Ball is a very viable tank over the Winston here. And Ameng is like, the man was on Numbani landing pile drivers on platforms like this, like on light posts. Like, I'm not even kidding. Yeah. To like get over the gate. Like, it was the things he was doing to me were nuts. And I think if more people could play Wrecking Ball in that way, he might actually just replace Winston in this meta. Now, that's not going to happen because the tank players just aren't equipped to do it.
Right.
But I think that this is one of those meta games where maybe Chengdu has a bit of a leg up, because maybe Wrecking Ball is the correct tank choice for the main tank, and maybe they're the only one with a player that understands and can play the hero well enough to actually pull it off.
Yeah.
So there is a sizable chance here. You know what? I'm going to do it. I don't have any other upsets planned for the week. So
all right.
I'm entering the Chengdu zone, and I'm going to say 3-1 win over Seoul here.
All right. I mean, I'm not going to take that. So
I don't blame you.
let's see. We'll go Tails. Tails is the number, never fails for Chengdu, because I want it to happen, but I'm not taking it. Ooh, and the coin agrees with Chengdu. So coin does agree with you, Death. Picks Chengdu. Next up, we've got Shanghai Dragons versus the London Spitfire. Seems like a tier jump here, Death, with Shanghai being pretty far above London here.
Yeah, it's really hard to imagine London being able to pull that one off, though it's just been so long since, like, I still feel like I don't know what the London Spitfire are, because they just haven't played very much. But we did see them lose to Guangzhou. They were competitive in that match. But yeah, I don't really view them as having much of a chance versus Guangzhou or Shanghai until they go out there and you know, perform at a similar level to them for more than one match at a time. They've shown the upward ability, the ability to spike and compete and play really well with those teams and possibly beat them. So I won't fall out of my chair if it happens, but I don't know. Unless Shanghai thinks it's the finals and so they see 9-17 times, then they're probably just going to get the W here.
Yep. I agree. NYXL on their get right week versus one of the better teams, if not the best team in the division right now, the Guangzhou Charge. I mean, despite me having never been an NY fan, of course, and always having been a Florida Mayhem fan here, I still got to give the 5-0 to NY.
It might be a 5-0, but New York's not going to win this one. Give me Guangzhou here 3-1. Not the matchup you want in the situation New York is in. This isn't how you turn it around. I'll say this, though. If New York wins, like that last week didn't happen, it's just instantly over. And
this is exactly what I will be saying and lobbying for.
Put them right back into where you had them before, which would still probably be behind Guangzhou and Shanghai, but like, Yeah, I don't know. Give me Guangzhou should win this one handily. Flip your stupid coin.
I will. Well, we'll go Tails Never Fails for
your point of infinite bias.
Well, yeah. Tails Never Fails for New York, of course. Oh, the coin knows better. It's going for Guangzhou here.
Now, one thing with this match, I want to put on the radar. Neptuno tweeted today. Come hang out with me. I need to stay awake so I can sleep in the flight. This is a man who's been in Spain because he hasn't been able to get a work visa to go back to China and live with and work in right. the country of China. Not a lot of reasons why people on planet Earth get on planes right now. One of right. the only reasons they do that for is because they work. Have to for yeah. work. This might be a sign that Neptuno got his visa approved and is on his way back. Going back to Spain this week to get a new visa. It was 9 hours ago, he tweeted. Okay, so I'm not expecting him in this game. So this is what happens when you see a tweet from 2 hours ago and not the one from 7 hours before that.
Right.
So, yeah, he's got to leave and then go back in order for his visa to be approved and take effect. And maybe that's what's happening. Maybe he was – I thought he was in Spain for a while now based off some – other comments or something like that. I don't know. But anyways, it sounds like he's working towards getting back to being able to play for Guangzhou. Yeah. I jumped the gun. It won't be in this match here. But hopefully that does happen soon. They were starting him and they were using him as their starting main support when yep. they had him. So I expect them to go back to that.
Yep. Up next, we have the rematch of the grand finals from season 2, San Francisco Shock versus Vancouver Titans. These teams are very different than they were now, but I don't imagine that this result will be very different, Death.
Probably not, but again, if this is a battle of the Genji players, the best one resides on Vancouver. And the difference between the, even though there's like four tiers difference between these mm-hmm. teams, this is very different than Boston, because even with Super on the Genji, the best Genji player resided on the San Francisco Shock roster. Yeah. And that, if that's really the key to the whole metagame is that Genji player, and it very well might be, he's a tad bit overtuned if you haven't noticed. That could level the playing field and make this more competitive than we think.
Yeah.
So I'll give Vancouver a map and hope for like a 5-map match out of this one, because it would be fun and a crazy storyline
yeah.
to start the weekend or start the Saturday at least. But 3-1 San Francisco here for me.
Yep. Next is Florida Mayhem versus Washington Justice. Tier gap here.
Boy, is Washington pretty bad. Yep. Florida 3-0.
Speaking of 3-0s, we've got Dallas Fuel versus the Boston Uprising.
Yeah, one of these teams is a competitive Overwatch team, so yep. Dallas 3-0.
Yep. All right, on to potentially a closer match, Philadelphia Fusion versus the LA Gladiators. I said potentially for a reason.
I shook my head for a reason. yeah, give me Philly here, 3-0. The Gladiators are a crazy team right now. They... get a little bit of the get right action against Vancouver, and I think the way this metagame's playing out should be beneficial for them.
Yeah,
but this is Philly we're talking about right. here. This isn't a matchup where you kind of, you know, this isn't one of those get right games, so they better have gotten all the way back to right against Vancouver in that 3-0 win if they want to even really compete here.
Yeah.
And the Gladiators are nothing more than a middle of the pack, not terrible team, but they sure do play like it sometimes, as the rest of the middle of the pack does too. Philly's proven to be better than that. Yep. I'll go 3-0 here for Philly.
Okay.
Great schedule again this weekend.
Moving to Sunday, we've got in the APAC region, Chengdu versus Hangzhou. Who do you have, Death?
Can I possibly predict them twice in a weekend?
Wow.
Is it possible?
It is, I mean, certainly on the table.
It's, I'll go Hangzhou because they beat Seoul instead of like, and they did it convincingly yeah. is why I'm going to go with them. And I've got to do it a little bit blind because I just haven't seen him enough, but man, I'm going to go 3-2 here because I really do think if Chengdu just like stops the ridiculous Pharah insanity and like just says, okay, like Jinmu, you're really good at Genji, so play Genji. Mm-hmm. And like if they just start there, they're in such a better place. But yeah, Hangzhou 3-2, super close game. Yeah. Not the all-stars of the region by any means, but it could be very competitive and very fun to watch.
Yep. Okay, we move on here to Shanghai versus Seoul. What do you got?
Man, Seoul got crushed by Hangzhou. It's not the playoffs. It's not the finals. The Shanghai will remember what the payload is, I'm confident. I'll go 3-1 because of just how much talent is on the Seoul roster. But, it should be an easy win for Shanghai.
Speaking I don't know if this is necessarily
wait for the off-topic conversations of will the Seoul dynasty ever not be a massive colossal disappointment. Like that's got to be one of the best off-season storylines that we're gonna have,
that it's been since literally season one, literally game one of the Overwatch League. I don't know if that's ever going to not be the case. But speaking of potentially massive colossal disappointments, we've got LA Gladiators again playing against the Paris Eternal. Does LA have a shot at all here? Nope. All right.
it can be that simple, but really Paris's only weakness to me is the main tank, the need to switch. Hanbin is probably, for my money, the best Sigma player in the league, at least gun to my head right now while talking about Paris.
What about Gator? That's what
I want to say. I stand by my statement. that's really the only weakness. And the Gladiators are like still trying to make Kevster feel comfortable and like kind of making do with pieces from former rosters that were good. And like Birdwing's played really well, but does he stack up? Now he's got to compete against like Sparkle and Eggsy and stuff. And like, I just don't know that he holds up against such all-star DPS players. I think that might be the Gladiators' weakness, is when they go against these rosters that are headlined by the DPS stars, that they just kind of fall apart. When they go against more balanced rosters, or when it becomes a battle of tank lines and support lines, then they're better off. Yeah. But yeah, Paris is going to win this one 3-1, I'll say.
All right.
Because another 3-0 would upset me. Horribly. Yeah.
But, Death, you might not like this next match then. We've got Toronto Defiant versus Philly Fusion. Has Toronto climbed up high enough into maybe the mid-tier to put up a shot against Philly?
No. But they are starting Surefour. So, assuming that continues and never changes ever again, please, Toronto, we might start to see them actually meaningfully improve.
Yeah.
The tank battle's interesting. Beast was in this week over Numlocked. So, I think that's going to be really interesting to look at going forward, how they handle that situation exactly. But no, hope to see Toronto be competitive, but you shouldn't. I'd be very surprised to see them win here. I'll go Philly 3-0 and hope I'm wrong.
All right, last match of the week, Death, Washington Justice versus your Houston Outlaws. What do you got?
Houston 3-0. I really Washington is second to the, like, honestly, I think they've fallen below even Vancouver in my mind at this point. Trying to think, what did they do this past weekend that might have changed my mind? I don't know. No. They got crushed by Toronto.
Yeah.
I think they're ill-equipped for the meta. It's very hard to envision a circumstance outside of playing against Boston where Washington finds success.
Right.
For a while now. So.
Yeah. Well, you could say that Washington Justice is the worst Overwatch League team in the Overwatch League, because it's hard to call Boston Uprising an Overwatch League team.
Fair. And listen, this is of the 3-0s I've called for, right? Like, this is a less likely to be 3-0 dominant. Like, putting it in perspective, I know anytime I predict Houston, that gets people gets a couple
Death,
people.
Why are you such a homer all the time?
But, you know, this is less likely to be a dominant 3-0 than Philly over Toronto or some of the other ones we've called for. But 3-1, I don't know. I'll be pretty upset in my boys if they fall short in this one here.
Well, Death, that is the end of the week, and that's going to be the end of the show. Anything else we want to cover before we get going here?
No, but since it's my last time to chat, I'll just say I've been streaming again. I've got some cool stuff going on stream, too.
It's true. I'm low-key a little bit jealous.
Twitch or YouTube. Our good friend, Thrill, Thrill Seeker on YouTube, Thrill Ooh Woo, as much as that hurt my soul to say out loud.
I'm so glad that you said that.
On Twitch, he's a phenomenal VR content creator. Sent me a headset that, fun fact, was formerly owned by one Blazin' Bob himself. And I've got this flight simulator, like throttle and joystick and everything like that. So I'm trying to have a lot of fun doing some VR streams and stuff like that. So check that out if you're at all interested. And check out Thrill stuff. Give him a follow and a like and subscribe on YouTube. He's a really great creator and a great guy and a good friend of ours.
And an even greater anime girl.
Yeah, facts. If you're into anime girls, watch that guy's stream.
Yes. Yes, that was correct. But
not a misspeak.
On that note, we bid you all adieu. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening in podcast, YouTube, Twitch world. We really do appreciate it. Again, best place to find us is discord.me/highnoonpodcast. It's got our links everywhere. We're found everywhere that you can find podcasts. You can also support us over at patreon.com/highnoonpodcast. That does really help us out, as well as going over to discord.me/highnoonpodcast. But for Deathblow, I am the Blevins. And remember, it's high noon. What am I even going to do if New York is like a bottom table team? Like, what do I, how do I live with myself like that? I don't.
One day at a time, brother.
How do you do it? I don't get it.